Inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Welcome to the show. Let's check in with Mark Lack.
Fred Joyle is the former CEO of 1-800-DENTIST, and he's also the founder of Futuredonics. During a recent visit to Business Rockstars, he told us why we should never hire our friends.
Because you lose the employee and the friend at the same time, because you have to fire them somewhere between 50 and 75% of the time.
Are these friends or investors?
No, friends. Friends,
okay.
Friends who are working for us.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they're like, hey, can I come work for you? And then all of a sudden, you become the man instead of a friend. And because they have work behavior that's totally different than friend behavior. So I would have...
That's a big lesson, by the way.
Yeah, and painful.
We just saw why it's a bad idea to hire your friends in business. And now to talk more on that, my guest is Ada Tarki, the CEO of X Consultants Agency. Really quick, what do you do?
I place management consultant into executive roles.
Okay, so have you ever hired a friend for business?
Yes, I have.
You have. What was it? Was it a good experience, a bad experience?
I managed to get away with it being an okay experience, but we did it as an experiment.
I would say, even the way you worded it, I managed to get away with it.
Yes, absolutely. It's very tough to make it work with friends because you have your friendship and it's very important to you and you don't want to ruin that. And then you overextend yourself and you're not as honest with your friends sometimes about what you're expecting from them as you are with your employees. But going into it and knowing that it's going to be that tough and having seen so many friendships getting ruined over working together in a business, me and my friend agreed that, look, let's work together for a few months. If it's not working out for us, we'll part ways in a friendly way and it's okay.
And I think on top of that, because one of the first people I hired in my business is one of my best friends and still is, and also one of my closest business partners who I started the business with. And so, you know, there has been a lot of pros and cons to it and ups and downs. But coming from the background that I come from, which is personal development and really kind of working on becoming your best self, I think that's had a huge impact of why we've been able to make it work. And then having the huge background of 20 years of knowing each other helps a lot. But I think it's also a really big testament. If you can make it work, it's a testament as to what you can do with somebody that you have that close relationship with, that you can triumph through the tough things. Because one of the hardest things to do is have a child and build a life together. And I think one of the other hardest things to do is with an individual or with a team is to build a business from scratch and to grow it. And so I think although it may be a bad idea to hire your best friends or friends in general, I think that if you can do it and if you can work through it, I think it can be a big testament as to what type of an individual you are and for how you know how to manage and work relationships. But on that note, why, for the average person, is it a bad idea to hire your friends?
Because it's your friendship is more worth than just a business. And it's so hard to communicate about everything on the same level, and you have different expectations going into it. And most people don't set those expectations clearly up front.
You nailed it. Most people don't set the clear expectations of what are we going to do when we have conflict? How are we going to handle conflict when it arises? What if we have disagreements? And setting those expectations
prior. How do we define success?
How do we define success? What are we going to do if one of us has to go on vacation and the other one's not? Who's going to complain about I'm working and you're not? So I love that. Setting the expectations is huge. I mean, you're a married man. You understand setting expectations, right?
Absolutely, yeah. It's extremely tough. When you come into a business and one friend says, I'm in it for the long haul. Let's invest into this business for the next 5 years, and then we'll see if we can make money from it. And the other person says, I have a family, and I have two children. I need to start making money in 2 months. And if you haven't set those expectations, and you kind of like say, well, we're good friends. We're going to figure it out,
right? Let's just start the business, yeah.
No, it's not going to go that way. It's like 2 years into the business, things are going to start falling apart. My mom used to say, if you really want to get to know someone, go on a trip with them. Really want to get to know someone, start a business with them,
right? That's definitely the whole spinoff right there. Like the elementary version is go on a vacation with somebody, because who's not going to have a good time? You're thriving on a vacation, hopefully. But when you start a business, that's when you're really going to get popped in the face. And if you can overcome the ups and the downs in a business, that shows a really testament to what type of a relationship and who you are as an individual.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about, you know, if you were going to have a great relationship in your business, because, you know, we could talk about why it's a bad idea to hire friends, but for the most part, we just kind of summed it up. So I'm curious to talk about how you can have those great relationships in business, regardless of if it's a friend or not. And you mentioned one, and that's setting clear expectations. What are some other things? Obviously, having trust and integrity, setting expectations, having a clear line of communication. But let's go deeper on some of these subjects or talk about some new ones.
Learning from each other, challenging each other, kind of like putting yourself in a position where you allow other people to challenge you and put you outside of your comfort zone and kind of like even like teasing you a little bit and showing you like, haha, I showed you something that
a little
you didn't
competitive,
know before.
Right? Yeah. A little competitive edge, okay.
Absolutely. And then working with people that you enjoy being around, even on a personal level. It's one of the things I enjoy about my company is that we're making fun of each other all day long, but it's just that kind of like group dynamic that we've created in our company.
Like a team of sports, right? Yeah, everyone's kind of jabbing each other, but they're doing it in a playful, fun way.
Absolutely. And that's something that kind of like gets me up in the morning, gets me to work, which is kind of like that fun environment and those fun people to be around. And if I had team members that were, let's say, bringing more money to the table, but we didn't have that dynamic, I'm sure that I wouldn't be as motivated to go into my business.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, who wants to show up to the business world? And just to make a broad blanket statement, right? If you have a lot of money, but you're miserable. Yes. At the end of the day, I'd way rather take happiness over money. I think the key and the real fun part of life is figuring out how to have everything. How to have the money, how to have the relationships, how to have the happiness, how to have the wealth. So on the topic of relationships right now, I think you're bringing up some great things. So you're obviously, you know, a plethora of knowledge on this subject. What else? You've got expectations, you've got creating a fun environment, challenging each other in a playful way. What are some other things?
Be honest with yourself. Let yourself like true personality and identity shine through at work. If you're really good at something, be honest with yourself and tell your boss you want to do it, tell your employees you want to do that.
Don't let them pigeonhole you into a space where they think you should be. Stay in an area of your strengths.
Yeah. Obviously, you need to be professional in a professional environment. But I think nowadays, some people take it to an extreme where they become such dry people where they don't really have a personality at work.
Yeah.
And then just see it as a way to get through the day. And then they come home and that's when the real life starts, right? At 7 p.m. or 5 p.m. whenever they get home. No, have fun while you're there. Make it a fire environment for yourself. Like, put yourself out there so that you're creating those good relationships.
Great advice from Atatarki. He's my guest right now. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Atatarki and I are talking about, you know, how to make sure that you can either avoid hiring your friends or just in general, how you can have an open line of communication and build great, meaningful relationships in your personal life and in your business. So we're talking about a couple of things here. I think we're on a good roll. Do you have some other things that you want to add into that about how to have that amazing relationship, whether it's working with your friend who you've already hired or whether it's just in any of the areas of your life with relationships? You've got so many, you're just spitting fire right now. So I want to see what else you got in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or maybe talk about some, you know, how do you deal with conflict in a relationship? I think it's almost inevitable. Nowadays, we're getting bombarded with so much information, and it's really creating a lot of stress. If you've done any research in the area of how stress has evolved and escalated over the last decades, it's at an all-time high. People are more stressed than they've ever been. And by having more stress in your life, I think a lot of it has to do with technology and the news and access to information and negative images and news and bombarded with all this information like you've never been before. But without going on that tangent, how does somebody overcome conflict in a relationship? Because that's the real key here. Conflict is inevitable in business and in personal life. But what's the key to resolving conflict?
You need to know what the playground rules are. So either you set those up front when you started your business or started working with your friends, or if you didn't and you start feeling like things are going down south, you gotta kind of like talk about it and say like, look, there's something we need to talk about.
Yeah.
Can we talk about it? Is it okay if we talk about it? No, it's not okay. Or yes, it is okay. Well, what happens if I tell you some stuff that is uncomfortable? Like, are we still gonna be friends or not? Mm. Or would you feel better about us having a third friend there?
Or something like that, right?
Absolutely, like set the playground rules and agree to those playground rules and then stick with them.
And I think when it comes to resolving conflict, one of my favorite sayings is, do you wanna be happy or do you wanna be right? Because at the end of the day, a lot of the times when you're in a conflict, it's because you're trying to prove why you're right and you're trying to make the other person wrong. And nobody wants to be put down. Nobody wants to be wrong, right? Everyone wants to try to feel like they're right, or if anything, be completely neutral to the situation. But when we have a conflict, a lot of the times it's you did this, you're to blame, or no, I know I did that, but you did this. And so you're trying to assign blame on somebody so that they're wrong and that you're right.
Yes.
And so at the end of the day, I think a simple way to resolve conflict is just to not have the conflict in the first place by choosing to be happy over feeling like you have to assign blame and make the person wrong. Do you think that there's another thing that you could add to that?
Absolutely. So if you're going into these conversations and you're trying to prove that you're right, you have to also live with the possibility that you're wrong. And
From their perspective, you are wrong. So how can you get into their shoes and see that and then kind of align with them and say, I understand I was wrong in this situation here. And I think that moving forward, here's how we can resolve that. And then from my perspective, here's how I see, you know, us being able to resolve this other conflict over here.
Yeah, again, it comes back to the expectations that you have between you guys and the relationship that you have.
I love that. Adit Tarki is my guest. I appreciate you for coming on the show.
Thank you, Mark.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
So you sit down and you do your budget and you look at all your monthly costs, your bills, your income, and it seems like there's never quite enough. You know what would help? What would really help? Finding $500 a month to help balance things out. And that is the typical savings. $500 a month for a family when you switch to MediShare for your healthcare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry, and it works. No wonder more than 400,000 people are doing this now. And look, whether you're single or married or you have kids, this can make sitting down to do a monthly budget a lot more fun. Just think what you could do with $500 a month. It can cover a car payment or payback loans or whatever. Join MediShare and go out to dinner to celebrate. Find out more. The MediShare people are so easy to talk to. They can answer any questions. They are super friendly. Call 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE. 844-91-BIBLE.
Freedom does.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Joining me right now is Elliot Taylor, the owner of Elliot Companies. Great to have you on the show, brother.
Thank you. Likewise.
So Elliot Companies, what is that? You guys own a bunch of different assets and organizations. What is it?
It's just a kind of term I wrapped around a bunch of different companies that are all vertically integrated in the food and beverage hospitality arena.
How did you get into that?
You know, so
you're a young guy. How do you have Elliot Companies? You own all these different things.
Yeah, man. I mean, it just one thing after the next kind of happened when I was, my family is in the industry of building restaurants, hotels, and nightclubs and bars and casinos.
That helps.
So, I grew up in that industry. I was, basically born in a kitchen, watching chefs and throwing food at different people and kind of learning that business from the get-go. And, I fell in love with it. My father always said, the world runs on restaurants. And if you really think about it, your first date, whether you're getting engaged or having a business meeting or starting a war, whatever it may be, it usually happened around breaking bread. And so I really just fell in love with that whole world and started to figure out ways that I could bring value to that industry.
I love how everybody, no matter what their business is, they live it and they breathe it in such a way where it doesn't matter if I'm interviewing somebody about a nail salon and they own all the biggest nail salons, or in your case,
That picture.
Restaurants, they're always like, the world revolves around.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Everyone's right. Got nails.
Whatever it may
restaurant.
Be.
Yeah, no, I just love that. So take me back to the beginning of your story real quick. I'm always curious to know when I'm sitting with somebody, when did the journey start? Like for me, my journey started around 14. That was one big chapter of a tipping point, and the next one was 18. When did you have sort of that light bulb moment and you were like, this entrepreneurship thing, this is for me. This is what I'm going to commit to.
Yeah, I've always been trying to do something from the day I can remember. I was trying to sell a CD or a toy or whatever in the sandbox, running out of shovel, whatever it may have been, I was trying to do.
So you were
something.
An entrepreneur 2 years
old. I was trying to do some business, from day one. But, some of the bigger projects that occurred and what really drug me into kind of the food and beverage industry when I was in high school, I really wanted to get into wine, but obviously not being the age of 21 in the U.S., that's not really an option. And so I started looking, and the next best thing over was olive oil. And so I fell into olive oil at a young age. I started taking classes at UC Davis. I reached out to COOC, the California Olive Oil Council, started working with them, and became one of the youngest professional olive oil tasters in high school.
So you're like an olive oil sommelier.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, yeah.
I love
I've
that.
Recently stopped being on the council this past year just because I'm just so swamped. I mean, we taste every Thursday and wow. approve oils, whether it being virgin or extra virgin, et cetera. Yeah, so that's kind of where it started, and then that went into an array of different activities. I mean, I wasn't.
So, do you go to like a restaurant and they give you like the olive oil and the bread, and you're just like, this is despicable. Get rid of this.
No, I mean, you know.
Not a snobby olive oil sommelier.
No, I mean, essentially with olive oil, I mean, it's everything that you think about olive oil, what we've been trained in the United States to think about olive oil is actually the opposite from what
do you mean?
What I've been learning. I mean, you know, people will come to me, know that I taste olive oil, and they'll say, hey, man, I've got this bottle of olive oil I've had for 5 years. Well, olive oil really only lasts about 12 months once it's open, or even less, because it oxidizes and goes bad and gets rancid. And so it's interesting watching it. And they show me, look at how beautifully gold it is, where, you know, sunlight harms olive oil. And so you want to have it in a dark black bottle or a darker colored bottle to protect it, keep it somewhere cool. Once you open it, only lasts about 6 months. So it's interesting. And then there's all these myths and legends about virgin, extra virgin, the differences and everything. So it gets pretty in depth. And, you know,
we'll have to do a whole segment.
We'll
just
have
on
to do a whole segment eventually on that. Yeah.
For the enthusiasts out there. So yeah. You got into that. Then what came next?
You know, I fell into extreme sports. I was, you know, I was on motorcycles first, motocross. And,
okay.
You know, I dropped the bike one day. My mom saw it. And the next day the bike was gone.
Yeah.
And I was pretty upset for several weeks. And then I somehow snuck myself into automobiles with a cage around me, which was a little bit more
even
acceptable.
More safe.
Yeah, right. But around that, I wanted to do some sort of business in that. So I came up with some idea to sponsor extreme athletes, and I started, you know, wanted to make t-shirts and hats and whatever it may be, jerseys around that. And so I remember ordering, you know, 1,000 shirts and paying a designer, not getting contracts signed, and just kind of going all in and you know, diving in head first and seeing what happens. And it was cool. I mean, I was sponsoring Adam Andretti in IndyCar Racing Series. I was traveling around all these major race sites across the country, and it was an epic time of life. And I met a lot of people, learned a lot of hard lessons, failed miserably in that business. I still have shirts to this day and hats to this day in my garage, just sitting there in boxes of them. But I love it. I'll never get rid of them. Maybe I'll donate them one day to something. But you know, I look at them every once in a while, I pass by them, and it's always a reminder to, you know, to remember the hard times of that business and what I learned during, you know, going through that whole process of that industry and then applying that to everything else that I've done, you know.
Elliot Taylor is joining us right now. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I just can't believe that you used to be a olive oil sommelier back what age? 14, 16?
Yeah, I mean, I got into it about, 16 or so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Elliott Companies owns food and beverage businesses.
Yeah.
And you also have a background in construction as well?
Yeah, no, my father.
How did you get into that? Just
well,
from
my
your dad?
My father's okay. been in general contracting for, you know, several generations. So I fell into that. You know, I was tossed on job sites with a hammer and with different trades from day one. And so, you know, fell into that industry, but it taught me a lot of hard work. I mean, it taught me to, you know, respect everybody's position. And I think that's something really important. I mean, a lot of people ask people to do things for them right now for their companies or their industries that they wouldn't do on their own. I'll never ask somebody to do something for me that I wouldn't personally do. You know, I was maybe thrown into a room of, you know, 2,000 square foot room, and I swept that floor. And I did that at age 15 or 17 or 18. And now at, you know, the age of 26, I have, you know, an office space, and I ask somebody to come here and sweep this floor in the next hour, and they say it can't be done. And I said, no, it can be done, because I've done it before. And so, you know, just going through from totally, you know, the bottom of the spectrum, from the mailroom all the way
started
up
at the
different,
bottom. Yeah, now Elliot's here.
Yeah, to demo, to just sweeping floors, man, and it teaches you a lot about
it humbles you,
the respect of everybody's position and how important it is to the business from down low to all the way to the top to the executive level.
So I know how big of an advantage it can have. It doesn't always, but I know how big of an advantage it can have when you come from a family of entrepreneurs, whether it's your mom or your dad. And so you and I are both around the same age, and both of our fathers are entrepreneurs. So I'm curious, what is some of the best advice? It could be two or three things, it could be one thing. What's some of the best advice your dad's given you?
Yeah, I mean, my dad's given me so much amazing advice. And, you know, to back up on that point that you just mentioned, I mean, it is difficult sometimes, too, from being from a family with heavy entrepreneurship or heavy success rates, because you're immediately assumed to be pumping out that quality.
You're held at a different level.
You're held at a totally higher level, and especially within those companies that your family's a part of. I mean, you're always the owner's son or the owner's daughter, whatever it may
be. And sometimes, I'm so curious for you, what has inspired and led you to wanting to achieve the level of success you have, when it would have been so easy for you to stay comfortable?
There was massive shoes to fill right out of the gate. I mean, with a successful family and a successful father. And I think, you know, one thing he's always told me from day one, I always had ideas. I always had, you know, brilliant concepts. And it's something I mentioned earlier, you know, measure success by results. I've always been somebody that, and it's become ingrained in myself now when I talk to people and, you know, people I'm working with or employees or other organizations that we're partnering with, they're talking about brilliant ideas and concepts. But until those are implemented and you see some sort of result from some sort of data from that idea, that concept that you put into action, that's when you can really say, okay, it was successful or I'm really going for it, you know, and actually putting that concept to paper.
I love that, man. Yeah. You're a hungry, driven, young hustler. I can't wait to pick your brain on some of the business stuff in a second when we get back.
Definitely. Thank you.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
Here is your healthcare update with America's healthcare advocate, Carrie Hall.
Do antioxidants really have a positive effect on our health and reverse the aging process? I'll be right back to tell you. Do antioxidants really reverse the aging process? Well, here's some real numbers that should make a difference to you. Death rates for people that take antioxidants are down by 50%. Cancer deaths are down by 13%. Cancer survival rates are up by 50%. Heart attack and stroke down by 50%. Skin cancer down by 70%. Infections are down by 50%. And cataracts are down by 27 to 36%. Those are some pretty powerful numbers, ladies and gentlemen, that show that antioxidants really do make a big difference in your life if you choose to take them. They can really reverse the aging process and allow you a much happier, healthier life. The cost of vitamins and minerals is small, especially compared with the money saved on drugs, doctor bills, hospitalization, and the ultimate effects of combined aging.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Joining me right now is Elliot Taylor, the owner of Elliot Companies. Give us a quick recap. What does Elliot Companies do?
Vertically integrated in the food and beverage industry, everything from investment in restaurants to alcohol brands, specifically wine.
Curious, curveball question here. What's the first app you check first thing in the morning?
It's mail right away, honestly, and it's bad. I've actually read that you know, you need to wake up and do your shower, whatever you may be doing, and then get to emails. Yeah. But I mean, I wake up and I literally grab my phone and I'm sitting there.
We're just so conditioned, right?
And I'm trying to see what are the major bad issues of the morning I got to deal with right away, and then that gets you out of bed real quick.
That's true. Know? Yeah. But it puts you in that reactive state,
right? It
does,
yeah.
So how do you stay in a proactive state of mind in your business? I think we were just talking about how, you know, you wake up in the morning and your habits and your rituals first thing off the bat can determine if you're going to be reactive throughout the day or proactive. So as a young, successful guy, when you have so many distractions and so many things pulling for your attention, how do you stay focused and proactive?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, one of the biggest projects that I have right now is a Mexican wine. It's a wine from Mexico. It's called Pavo Real Wines. And it's one of the first wines out of Mexico in the United States that's nationally distributed. And with that project, there's so many logistic items that you got to deal with. I mean, shipping to customs, to tax IDs, to brokers, to import license, to you name it. And those things take time. They're not like I can just code it and throw it up on the wall and we're good to go and HTML5 it. You know, it's very projected oriented. Yeah. You got to be very smart about what's going on in strategy. And so something I've learned to love is bad news. I love bad news. Mm. I start every morning with bad news.
I love that you said that, because when somebody asks, and I don't remember which one of my mentors told me this, but when somebody asks, do you want the good news or the bad news? We've all been asked that
bad
at some
news
point
out
in
of
our
the
life.
Gate. Yeah.
I always say, lay it on me, give me the bad news.
Yeah.
Because if you can learn and condition yourself to always overcome and deal with any of the obstacles, fears, frustrations, and bad news in your life, you can obviously handle the good news.
Absolutely.
So how did you come up with that?
No, I mean, you know, I just, I had a former business partner of mine would say that to me all the time. He was just like, I love bad news. And it stuck with me. And it was, it's been ingrained in my mind. And now it's, I think it's really perception. You know, a lot of people are afraid of bad news. They push it off. They say, okay, I'll deal with that tomorrow. I'll deal with that next week, next quarter, whatever it may be.
I look at it as, do you want to get stronger? Or do you want to condition comfort in being weak?
Definitely.
So when somebody says, do you want the bad news or the good news? If I pick the good news, it's like, I want to be comfortable and weak.
Yeah.
Somebody says, can you handle the bad news? I go, bring it on.
No, bring it on. Take those hits right out of the gate and know what you're dealing with. Know what kind of, you know, ring you're in the morning. Yeah. And, you know, and it also it's very important to show the people that you're working with, that you're partnering with, your employees, whatever it may be, that you are willing to take on those problems out of the gate.
Yeah.
Because if you push off bad news and people see that happening constantly, people that you're working with or employed by you, I'm telling you, they're not going to bring you the bad news because they know you don't want to hear it.
Exactly.
And so they're going to hide it. And then before you know it, Friday comes along, you get 10 emails that are all problems that started on Monday. And you're wondering why this didn't get
dealt with. And you have a pile of bad news.
Exactly. And then you're there through the weekend. But I'm there through the weekend anyways. But, you know. You know, it'd be nice to just take those problems out of the gate, deal with them, and then the rest of the day is, you know, just promotions and sales.
Speaking of problems, have you ever had a client or an employee or a partner or maybe even a family member, because I know you came from a family business, that's been a problem, that's been an issue, and as a result, you had to end up firing them?
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean...
it's almost inevitable at some point throughout business. So I'm just curious for you, do you have a perspective or a context that you could take us to where you're like, this one time we had a partner who was, you know, maybe our biggest service provider and we had to cut ties with them because of a reason, or we had this employee and they were super talented, but they were just a negative toxic drain on the business.
No, it's very difficult working with friends. You know, I'm pro partnering with friends, but hiring friends has always been very difficult.
And there's a distinction there.
There's a huge distinction there, and people sometimes don't understand that distinction. And you know, being somewhat younger in the game, you have a lot of your friends constantly wanting to work with you, or hey man, hire me. Hey man, put me on there. Let me help you out. And it just never works out. Honestly, I don't know any situation that I've ever hired a friend or asked a friend to help me with a certain project that I'm going to compensate them for their services, because it's just, you can't separate that friend and employee bond. You know, I love everybody that I work with are my friends. They're a community with me. They're a family, and I respect that. But it's very difficult, you know, with childhood friends or people that you are really comfortable with hanging out with on the regular basis to then say, hey, I need this done now.
That's tough.
How do you approach that the right way? And it just, you know, then you're not focusing on sales or promoting or, you know, scaling the business. You're focused on dealing with internal issues, you know, which just slows you down.
Yeah. What do you think is the hardest part about being able to juggle all the different things in business? I see people complain, oh, it's so hard. I got my 9-to-5 job and then I get off work and I just don't have any time to do anything. You know, I got to make sure I watch TV for 4 hours. So how do you, as a truly productive and busy entrepreneur, balance everything? You've got multiple companies. Most people struggle to even not only have one business, but make one business successful. And you're doing it with multiple. So I'm curious, how do you do that?
You just do it, you know? And I don't really know other explanation than that. I mean, I'm, you know, it's...
There's got to be some tactical things that you do. You have a stronger mindset. You know, you condition a level of focus and discipline that most people can't. One of the things I noticed already is you said, I'll take the bad news over the good news any day.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things right there. So it's like, you know, when you have all these businesses, bad news is inevitable. Fears, frustration, stress, what most people will call problems, you look at it as an opportunity. So that's one thing right there about your mindset.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious, what else?
No, I think something that I do that allows me to just, you know, relax a little bit in the evenings is when I'm leaving the office, it's usually late. I used to just go home and think about everything I had to do tomorrow. And I'm stressing about, okay, I got that on Tuesday, this tomorrow, this is due then, et cetera. And so what I've done now, what I do now, is I go in right before I walk out of the office and lock the door, first one in, last one out, I write down exactly what I need to do tomorrow. First objectives of the day.
Yeah.
What needs to be done immediately upon 6 a.m.? What needs to be done throughout the day? What needs to be touched on? And then, you know, I write those out. It's divulged out of my brain onto the paper. I know it's on my desk sitting there ready to be checked off, and I can go home and like chill out a little bit. So I come in the morning knowing that it's just kind of dialed. It's there for me, so I can just jump on it as opposed to trying to remember from the night before.
So you end your day by planning the next day.
Totally, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I love that.
Yeah.
So when it comes to goals, because that's kind of what we're talking about here, you end your day planning the next day. So it's kind of like a very short-term goal.
Yeah.
What am I going to accomplish for tomorrow? I'm curious, in your businesses, when you are going to set a benchmark or a monthly or quarterly or annual goal, how do you go about doing that to make sure that this is a goal that is going to allow our company and our employees to grow, And then how do you tie in everybody to make sure that they're in alignment with the achievement of that goal? Because it's not easy to do.
It's not easy. I mean, you've got to keep it very positive, and you know, it stresses a lot of people out when you yeah. set goals, and everybody gets anxious and everything. But, you know, I think you've got to bring everybody together, similar to like a sporting event, and just get everybody riled up and pump it out and just say, hey, guys, we can do this. We can do this. And whatever it takes, we'll do it. And you got to be willing to ride that. You got to captain the ship. You got to be able to go into the storm, ride through the storm, and ride through the sunny days as well. And so just leading the pack that way and having a smile on your face, no matter what's going on at home or what issues you have internally, never bring that to work, man. Never bring that and show that to other people. You always should have a smile. And when everybody asks you, hey, how are you doing today? I'm doing great. No matter what's happening, you know, I'm doing great.
I love that, because yeah. you've got to be that guy in your business. As we come to a wrap, brother, I just want maybe one or two sentences for you for the aspiring entrepreneur. Let's call him John.
Yeah.
John's with us right now. He's got a 9-to-5 job. He's dying to start his business and turn his idea into something profitable. What's one or two sentences for him?
Well, be willing to work every single day. Get the whole Monday through Friday weekends out of your mindset. You know, be okay with telling your friends on Friday and Saturday, I'm not going to go to the club, or I'm not going to go to the bar. I'm going to sit at home and I'm going to do this work. And, you know, you've got to put in the time. So it just doesn't happen on its own, and no one's going to do it for you. You cannot rely on anybody else but yourself. Mm. So every single thing you want done, you better start that off.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Joining me right now is Elliot Taylor, the owner of Elliot Companies. Give us the real quick recap. I know you're in the food and wine industry
yeah.
and beverages, but what do you guys do?
Well, the big project right now we're focused on is a wine brand coming out of Mexico, one of the first of its kind, and we're really pushing that right now. There's, you know, 70,000 Mexican restaurants in the United States, and there's no Mexican wine. You go to an Italian restaurant.
I was going to say, you said Mexican wine, and I was like, I don't think I've ever heard of that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, listen, and what's mind-blowing is the oldest winery in the history of the Western Hemisphere. And so, you know, it's interesting. They've been making wine long before there was a Napa Valley or Santa Barbara or Russian River. And so it's interesting. I mean, it's just a niche, and I always found there's you know, riches and niches.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's 70,000+ Mexican restaurants in the United States. You go to an Italian restaurant, you get Italian wine. French restaurant, French wine. Why wouldn't it be the same for a Mexican restaurant?
Go to a Mexican restaurant.
Yeah, and so I don't know. I'm always trying to find the niches and find something interesting there. And when I heard about Mexican wine, I dove into it.
I love that. And I'm curious to know if you align with one of the beliefs that I align with in one of my mentors, who actually was one of the founding board members of a multi-billion dollar restaurant chain. Took it from one restaurant to over 2,000. And I speak all over the nation at different colleges and stuff to young adults to inspire and empower them. And I asked him, I said, you know, a lot of the times young adults say, you know, should I become an entrepreneur? Mm-hmm. How do I know if I should be an entrepreneur or not? And I asked him that question. I said, you know, having so many years of experience and being so successful, how does somebody become an entrepreneur? Like, when do they know? And I was like, what's your advice? You know, if all these young adults are asking you, how do I know if I should be an entrepreneur? He said, don't do it.
Yeah.
He said, if anyone's even asking, tell them no. He says, because 99.999% of people do not have the DNA to go after what it's going to take to become an entrepreneur. And I thought, wow, this is coming from this amazing, you know, businessman. And he's saying people should not become entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, going back to the point, I mean, I've never asked, should I be an entrepreneur or anything like that? I just, you know, and today I don't even know if I'd use that terminology. I mean, I'm just attacking business ideas that I'm into and just going for it.
You're just a businessman.
Just going for it. Yeah. Capitalist on it, you know? And I think if you're wanting to become an entrepreneur, just maybe take that whole concept of wanting to become an entrepreneur out of your mind and just pick a project, pick an idea that you have that you think is cool, and just focus on that. Don't focus on being associated with an entrepreneur or being called a...
Don't worry about the label,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Just focus on making an unbelievable product at the highest quality that you can, creating good relationships, having an unbelievable reputation in the industry that you're going into. And create something that's a legacy. You know, don't try and flip anything. Don't get into it and say, I'm going to make this and make a quick buck here.
Don't make a dollar, make a difference. It's a saying that I try to live by.
Yeah, and try and, you know, whatever concept or idea you're working on right now, think about maybe passing that on to your kid one day or passing that on to somebody else. And that will allow you to set up relationships in that industry very, very, very organically from the get-go. And you'll be respected for that for sure.
One of my mentors shared with me something that literally changed my life. Just from a mindset perspective. Mm. And he said, successful people are moving scared. Unsuccessful people are frozen stiff. And I think it's so powerful because a lot of the times people that are trying to get an entrepreneurship in business, they think that I'm scared to get started, and I shouldn't start if I'm scared.
Yeah.
So what do you think about that? As we come to a wrap on here, just like as
no,
a
you're
mindset
right. I mean, everything I've gotten involved in, I was worried about it, but you've got to be willing to just go for it. And it's just like jumping out of a plane. You just got to go for it and hope that the chute will open, you know. But
yeah,
it's a little bit of blind faith, but you've got to have strong trust in yourself. And if you can do that, if you can have confidence in yourself and be willing to ride that ship out in any storm, I think you'll see the light at the end of the tunnel for sure.
I love that. Blowing me away. Elliot Taylor in the house, man. 26 years old. I appreciate you for coming on the show.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate it.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
Hey, my friend's retail store was the victim of IoT password theft.
Yep. Cybercriminals are taking over security cameras, payment systems, and other IoT devices by exploiting vulnerabilities.
What if they target us and our dispersed network?
We're secured with Barracuda. We have advanced firewalls for our sites, enhanced security for our cloud infrastructure, and total email protection.
Such a relief.
Protect your business at Barracuda.com. Barracuda, your journey secured.
Have you heard what President Trump said recently?
Newsmax, you like Newsmax. I like it too. I like it too.
Now you can watch Newsmax TV and get the truth about Trump from Bill O'Reilly, Mike Reagan, Alan Dershowitz, Pat Buchanan, and more. Newsmax TV is America's fastest growing cable news channel, now in 70 million homes. Find Newsmax on DirecTV, Dish, Xfinity, Spectrum, Optimum, Fios, UVerse, and more systems. See Newsmax TV today. It's real news for real people.
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated, what other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. To save even more, enter ROCKSTAR in the referral box at checkout. That's LegalZoom.com.
We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Welcome to Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Scott Duffy is with us, and Scott runs as a host of Business and Burgers.
Yeah.
What's that?
Well,
delicious,
it is a search for the best burger in America, and we like to say a side of tasty business advice.
So you bring people together, and you eat burgers?
We do. We go to cities all over America.
The venue is a burger place.
The venue is a burger place, and we bring in the top entrepreneurs and entertainers and athletes, and we sit around, we have these great burgers and sides, and we talk about the lessons that they've learned in business.
Now, you wrote a bestseller called Launch.
Yes.
What's that about?
Well, it's all about taking your idea to market. And it's not about building the next, Facebook or Google or Virgin. It's all about taking whatever it is you're passionate about and taking that idea and building.
How long should that take?
Well, I think you should be able to get to market in less than 90 days. And what happens is people say, I need more time. And the way I look at it is more time means more complexity, more money, more chance things can just go sideways.
Right.
So what I do.
Procrastinate.
Yeah. I just say, do this. Take one thing, the simplest thing that you're thinking about doing, put that together, get it in people's hands, and start to get feedback. And then from there, decide what to do next.
90 days from start to finish? Or is there 50 days of preparation to start the 90 days?
Well, so I look at launching a company in 90-day cycles. Mm-hmm. And so the first cycle about getting to market is all about taking that thing and getting it into customers' hands. Mm-hmm. And then from there, continuing to iterate in these 90-day cycles.
Does that work?
It does.
Is it reasonable?
It does. It works. It's reasonable. And I'll tell you what, it'll save you a lot of time and a lot of money. Because again, people, they tend to think they need more time. So they build more stuff, create more complexity. They spend more money before they ever get something into a customer's hand. And then what happens is oftentimes somebody tries it and they're like, I don't like this thing at all.
What's the schematic for that 90 days? I mean, there's so much to do. Fundraising, marketing, social media. Sell it, elevator pitch, all that kind of stuff.
Well, what I say is just take the simplest version, not the hardest thing, the simplest thing of what it is that you want to get to market, create that thing. If you want to have a deli, you want to open up a deli, make sandwiches and give them to your friends and see what people like. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to start a technology company, instead of building everything, build one thing, get that into customers' hands and see how they react to it. And I do that before I do all of the marketing and all of the selling. You know, instead what I'm trying to do is find the right product market fit before I ever invest a lot of money and a lot of time behind something.
See, I think a lot of people come out of business schools, nothing against that, but, and they think it's, you know, you've got to have everything in place. Mm-hmm. As opposed to your plan, where you learn maybe on the 10th day.
Yeah.
You learn something new, and now you got 80 days to perfect that.
Well, I agree with you. It's such a big mistake entrepreneurs make. They think they've got to have everything in place before they jump in. But what I found is the people who are most successful, what they've learned how to do is identify what they need each and every step of the way. And so they jump in, they don't wait. What they understand—
So how do you pivot then?
Well, they understand the difference between having resources and being resourceful. And I think that's what truly makes them great. You get to market, you learn what you need, and then you accumulate those things every step of the way.
We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Sorry to interrupt you. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Scott Duffy is our guest. Yeah, it's an interesting concept. I think that people just think it's hard. It probably is still hard within 90 days, but they think it's complicated.
Yeah.
It probably is complicated, but maybe they overthink it.
I have a friend, really good friend, and he had
you have a friend?
I do, believe it or not, I got a friend.
By.
Yeah, and he started an internet business. Mm-hmm. And I remember he called me and he was really excited because he raised $2 million on the idea of building this internet business. And what he was doing is he was solving one problem for one person. And that's what it was. And he got this $2 million in the door. It was a couple years ago.
Right.
I run into him a year later. I said, how are you guys doing? And it turned out he was on his way to go see his attorney. They were shutting the business down. And I said, how is that possible? How could you spend all that money? And here's what he said. He said, when we got started, we were lean. We focused on one thing and one customer. But when the money came in the door, a funny thing happened. Every single day, somebody came in with another great idea, another shiny object. And so we kept building and building and building before we released. We spent all this money. And then when we finally went to market, here's what we learned. 95% of our users only used 5% of our site. And if you reverse engineer that, 95% of their time and money was completely wasted. The 5% they used was the original idea. And so again, you focus on one thing, get it out there, and let your customers tell you what to build next.
And sometimes you can grow too fast, right? Am I wrong?
Yeah.
And suddenly, I'm taking your 90-day model.
Yeah.
You're 10 days in, suddenly everybody wants your product or wants you. And you don't have enough people or money or whatever. I mean, how do you get that balance?
You really have to manage your growth, particularly if you're in a business that requires inventory.
Yeah.
People, you know, growth eats cash. And I can't tell you how many businesses I've run into, great ideas, great owners, but what happens is they get that big order. And they think it's the best day of their life. That big order puts them out of business.
Yay, woo, party.
That's right. But now you have to go pay for that product in order to deliver it. Now somebody's going to tell you that they want terms. And before you know it, you've run out of cash. The most important job of any entrepreneur has absolutely nothing to do with business. It's not about building a team, leadership. It's not about any of that. The most important job of any entrepreneur is to learn how to protect themselves. So if things don't work out as planned, if they take longer than planned, they go sideways, you protected yourself so that you can bounce back.
I like one of the things on your sheet here. It says, it's the person you come home to every day.
Yeah.
Is that a dog or a wife? Yeah, I say, get a dog if you want a friend, right?
I'm a big fan of Howard Schultz in Starbucks, and I had the opportunity to do an event with him
a few years ago. He's a friend
of mine. He's amazing.
Pretty smart.
And he finished doing the speech, and he was in a room of 300-400 entrepreneurs. And when he was finished, I remember it kind of fell flat. It was a little bit corporate. And at the end of that speech, there was a there was Q&A. And the last person said, I'm such a big fan. I drink your coffee every day. He said, but what I've learned today is I'm nothing like you. Because when you're talking about going through hard times today, you had $1 billion in your pocket. When everyone else in this room is going through hard times, they're trying to figure out how to make payroll and feed their family at the same time. Man, in that moment, I became Howard Schultz's biggest fan.
We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. This has been Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. See you next time.
This information is given with the understanding that the host nor Business Rockstars is engaged in rendering legal, accounting, business, or other professional advice. Since the details of your situation are unique, you should additionally seek the advice and services of a competent professional.